Daniel Bergner writes in his new book about Sierra Leone, if you've heard of it, you likely know it as the place of lost hands. He's talking about the indiscriminate practice of amputation by rebels in the tiny West African country's ghastly civil war. Daniel Bergner began reporting from Sierra Leone in 2000, while the civil war was still raging. British forces had just arrived to help establish peace in their former colony. Watching the soldiers, Bergner says, was like witnessing a scene from the 19th century.
The British soldiers were trying to train Sierra Leonean troops, and they were putting on what they called a royal firepower demonstration. That is a demonstration of what British military equipment could accomplish. And the Sierra Leoneans were in awe and were calling out in the middle of this jungle clearing, "Long live the British." And in fact, Sierra Leoneans in general were expressing to me constantly a longing to be recolonized by the British.
They're quite clear about this. One of the men you talked to about this is your own driver, who says, yeah, we want them back.
Right. My own driver was incredulous that I would be surprised. Had he not been more polite, he would have called me a fool. He basically said, look at what's happened here. Look what the British left us. And look where we are now. Why wouldn't we want what he called our father back?
This comes up also with the character Lamine, a man you've met who has lost both of his hands. Both of his hands were amputated by the rebels. And at one point, he says also, it's better that we get back to our master. He rubs his own skin and says it'll take a long time to get rid of this. Tell us about Lamine.
Lamine, in a way, was an utterly impressive person to me. Basically, what had happened on his hillside just outside of the capital, Freetown, is that he'd saved his daughter from being raped by a soldier who'd come to his door, and he'd actually managed to get his daughter to the back of his small house, lifted her out the back window. She'd escaped. But he, as a kind of punishment, like many others, had had both his hands cut off. And a lot of the book is about how he tries to rebuild his life. And you can imagine how difficult that is in a world where really medicine as we know it doesn't exist.
He has endured horrible, horrible trauma and comes to New York, is fitted for prosthetic hands. Tell us about how he adapts to using those hands, which are really claws.
Well, it was amazing to me. They are exactly that, claws. They're the old-fashioned sort of two steel pincers make up each hand. And the way these hands work is that there's a strap behind the shoulder blades. And by shrugging your shoulders a lot or a little or in different ways, you make these pincers work. And Lamine eventually trained himself so deftly that one time we were walking in downtown Freetown and we got change for a drink, and this tiny coin about the size of a dime was laid on a glass counter, and with no trouble at all, he could pluck that up just as he could fold a handkerchief. And just as, I should say, this was sort of his biggest dream was that he could go to the bathroom by himself.
You are there with Lamine after a ceasefire has been established and there are elections for the first time, and you're there with him when he goes to vote.
Right. Lamine walked in to vote, and the way you vote in Sierra Leone is typically by dipping your finger in ink and then pressing your fingerprint beside your candidate, because many, many people can't read at all. But of course, Lamine didn't have fingers, and so to watch him dip his toe in ink and place it beside his candidate's name was, you know, needless to say, for me, a pretty moving moment.
What was it like for him?
Well, even more moving than it was for me, definitely. I mean, he was thrilled by that day. To watch him talk about it and talk about how he was going to wear these special sandals so that he could get his toe into the ink quickly and easily is just something I'll never forget.
At some point when you're in Sierra Leone and researching for this book, you realize that you're confronting your own racism in very powerful ways. Could you tell us how that came about, how you came to that realization and where that led you?
Well, the realization, I guess, came slowly. And maybe the best way is to just go to one of the extremes. I mean, one of the people I spent a lot of time with and wrote about, because his story was so dramatic, was this mercenary gunship pilot, Neil Ellis. And he, if he were here on the air, would say openly, war is the biggest and best game available to mankind. and his helicopter gunship, among other armaments, would spray 80 bullets per second into crowds. He'd fought avidly on behalf of apartheid. He was a Rhodesian. But he was now flying near suicidal missions on behalf of the Sierra Leonean government. So here is this man who is very complex. And I wanted to be with him partly for that moral complexity and partly just to see if he would survive and what he could accomplish here. But there was partly just, I had to admit it finally, a pleasure in being with him, because being with him was power, and being with him was being with people who were being deified by the Sierra Leoneans, and being deified because, or at least largely because, they were white.
You spend some time with a Sierra Leonean medical student named Michael Hosea, and there's a scene in the book where you've gone with him to a medical lab. He wants to show you the lab, and it's a mess. There are test tubes that have no stoppers, and blood samples have spilled all over the place. But he's very intent on doing his work, and there's a point when you ask him if he worries that all of the things that he's building toward, a career as a doctor, might amount to nothing. And I wonder if you could read the part of the book where you describe his answer.
Okay, here's Michael talking. "No," he answered. "I believe in evolution, not revolution. Rome wasn't built in a day. And the stock phrases would have been empty elsewhere. But here, the words carried strange weight, for it was possible to feel, in Sierra Leone, what it would take to transform a society, to build a new civilization. There must have been a relentless burden on the shoulders, a constant resistance to every step, for anyone who aimed at even part of such change. My shoulders felt too weak, my lungs too shallow, to contemplate it." He added a red dye to the slide, then needed to heat the specimen in order to break down the lipid layer, he said, so the stain can penetrate the microbacterium. Elsewhere, this would have been accomplished by placing the slide for 2 hours inside an incubator set to 75 degrees Celsius. Here, Michael found on the counter the stub of a candle, an inch or two high. Lighting it, he lifted the flame, passing it back and forth beneath the glass. In his fingers, the candle seemed a specialized tool, and in that place, it seemed a beacon.
Daniel Bergner, reading from his book In the Land of Magic Soldiers, a story of white and black in West Africa.